Fourth Canto, chapter 17, verse number 12 and 13. After hearing this lamentation and seeing the pitiable condition of the citizens, King Prithu contemplated this matter for a long time to see if he could find out the underlying cause. After hearing this lamentable condition of the citizens, King Prithu contemplated this matter for a long time to see if he could find out the underlying cause. Iti vyavasito puja pragrihita sarasana sandade vishikam bhume krudas chipuraha yata. Having arrived at a conclusion, can you repeat? The king took up his bow and arrows and aimed them at the earth, exactly like Shiva, who destroys the whole world out of anger. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Prithu found out the cause for the scarcity of food grains. He could understand that it was not the people's fault, for they were not lazy in executing their duties. Rather, the earth was not producing sufficient food grains. This indicates that the earth can produce sufficiently if everything is properly arranged. But sometimes the earth can refuse to produce food grains for various reasons. The theory that there is a scarcity of food grains due to the increase of population is not a very sound theory. There are other causes that enable the earth to produce profusely or to stop producing. King Prithu found out the proper causes and took the necessary steps immediately. Om Ajana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksura Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovikram Satipam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Daravishwa Karanatikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uja Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shri Shri Rupam Sajivatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vikamtam Sajivam Sajaitam Savarupam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shivaha Krishna Padam Sahagana Raghunatam Shri Vishakam Vikam Pancha Kapa Tuliyasya Vipasindhu Vyasya Patikanam Pavaniyo Vaishnavindhu Namaha. The king is meant to protect the citizens, all the citizens. In the Vedic king, they had a time of day when he would go out on the balcony or something and everybody could come with any complaint they had. And then the king would do something about it. I can't remember, there's a few countries now that have a king, but one of them has a website for that, you know, where people can write in, and he actually checks it. The government is supposed to be like that. Nowadays the government is just complaining about the people. I was telling yesterday about this thing Prabhupada wrote, what's wrong? This was, I think, 1957. On the 16th of February, 1957, a meeting was held at the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan to discuss the above subject matter, what's wrong, what's the matter with the world? Distinguished gentlemen from different categories spoke on the subject, but practically nobody could give us a definite direction as to what actually the matter was that was troubling the whole situation. This feeling of pinching in the existence of our life is a good sign for progress. It is an urge for inquiry, what is the wrong in the world that gives us trouble? This trouble is not a new thing. But it is a matter of permanent settlement in all the days of life. But it may be felt at different times in different colors. The troubles are in varieties of relation with our mind and body, in relation with our dealings with other living entities, and in relation with natural phenomena. The present pinching trouble for our political leaders in the matter of the Kashmir affair is a trouble in relationships with our other friendly nations. Kashmir is a part of India, not only at present, but it is so from time immemorial, but the Kashmir problem has arisen as a matter of course because the world is so created that there must exist some sort of trouble. May it be in the relation with the body or other living beings or the natural phenomena, that's Atma, right? The four, threefold misery from the self, from the body, from the mind, from other living beings, and from guidance. And this Kashmir thing is still going on. India has a huge army on the border and they're always fighting and always, and it's not helping anybody. They just has to be. These troubles are like the forest fire. Fire takes place in the dense forest without any attempt by any living being. Nobody in the forest wants such a fire, but it takes place without any demand. When there's a fire, the living beings in the forest are put into trouble, and sometimes it so happens that most of the forest creatures die in the havoc. There is no fire brigade in the forest or on top of the forest mountain, and there's no hope for extinguishing the fire by any human attempt. It takes by natural laws, and it is extinguished by natural laws also. That is, when there is a torrent of rain in the forest. That is natural law, and these laws are so rigid and stern that no human brain, however it may be powerful, can solve these problems of natural law. In America, every year there are so many forest fires. And they do have forest fighters. They have airplanes that scoop full of water, they can scoop down and fill up water and then dump water on it. But all they can do is a little bit stop it from spreading. They blow dynamite and blow up thousands of trees so there's nothing to burn to try to keep it from spreading. But then the fire creates so much heat that in wind it'll jump like really far. So thousands of houses get burned down, and then later when it rains, that puts out the fire, but then when it rains more, there's nothing to stop the water and it floods everything. Then they get mudslides later and ruins more houses. Every year it gets worse and worse. And the humans, they make huge endeavors with big airplanes and helicopters and so much equipment, but they can't stop it. They just say, oh, it might rain, we're hoping it's going to rain, looks like it might rain. And when it finally rains really heavy, then it will put it out. And we sing Samsara Dava Naruloka. The sincere world, like a forest fire, everything is burning up, our mind is burning up. And nobody has to start that fire, it just starts. We just look at something, we hear something, we smell something, and immediately something happens. Kuch kuch hota hai, we say in Hindi. When I was in Bombay, I saw this movie billboard everywhere. Kuch kuch hota hai. So I asked, what does that mean? I said, that means something happens. Of course, it's the boy meets girl and then something happens. But something happens. Whatever you do, whatever you contact, whoever you meet, whatever you see, whatever you hear, something happens. So we're supposed to learn how to react or respond, actually, is a better word, as Krishna would respond, or how Krishna would. That's why we study great personalities like the Pandavas and King Prithu, Krishna, Prabhupada, so that we can try to emulate Bhagavati Krishna Maharaj here. Not that we just want to say, I have the best guru, but we want to try to be like him. The disciples should be trying to remember how would the guru deal with it. Right? Giriraj Swami, he told a story about when they were in Bombay in the early days. Of course, it was quite difficult, really hard to do. We can't imagine. They didn't have any, you know, what they'd eat from day to day, and everyone was sick all the time, malaria, jaundice, there were rats and huge mosquitoes, and no crop or anything. But the Prabhupada would stay there and he was feeling ecstasy. So there was one devotee, because he could never get along. He didn't like that devotee, no matter what, he did not like. Couldn't find anything good. And then one day he saw that devotee talking to Prabhupada. And they were having a very, you know, loving rasa. So then he thought, well, what's wrong with me that I can't find anything good about this devotee, but Prabhupada loves him. So that does help, you know. And if you listen to Bhakti Krishnamurti's memories of Radhana Swami, there was a few incidents like that in his life. One was not really so not. They just couldn't get along. They were competing, you know, to be the biggest bookseller. And finally, they were both like so distressed, and they finally realized that they should be friends. That Krishna has to help us. So we want to develop that Vanchakalpa through this job, creepers into compassion, merciful to all the beings. Otherwise, we can't go back to Godhead. There has to be compassion. Compassion means we feel something for the suffering of others, and we want to do something to alleviate that suffering. Lord Shiva said that great souls almost always accept voluntary suffering for the sake of helping others. Anyway, go on. The natural laws are like the police actions by the agents of Godhead. Men who are too much captivated by the glamour of material beauty and try to enjoy it falsely without acknowledgement of its creator are called demons. The stringent material laws are meant for the criminals, but not for the law abiders. Therefore, the perfect answer to the question, what is the matter with the world, is that men have become demons by breaking the laws of God. Therefore, they are being punished by the police action of material nature. That is the verdict of all scriptures, and that is our day-to-day life experience. In the Bhagavad Gita, a vivid description of the law breakers, demoniac men, is given in the 18th chapter, and such men are punished by the laws of God, are also maintained. Human civilizations are conducted in two ways. One type of civilization can make every being as much qualified as God is, and the other type of civilization can make every man no less than a jungle beast, and thereby making the world unfit for human habitation. Quite far on, strong word. But nobody could say, well, that, how many years ago was that? 50 years, right? 50 years, 1957.
Yeah.
50 years. None of you were born, right? No, I just born. So most of you were not born. But we can't say, well, the world, we think it's changing, but it's really the same. But there are changes. The demoniac influence are more widespread. The people are more intoxicated. More people are having illicit sex. More people are gambling. More people are eating meat. That's going on. But the same things are going on. So they're being punished. And we have to be careful. Like in, I was in China, so they had that big earthquake. And it was real. You know. And so this, and it kept coming again. Every few days a big one come again, pretty big one. And it was flooding and mudslides, and millions of, something like 11 million homes were destroyed. So there's one big movie star, American movie star. And she had just, she's really intelligent, you know, over. And she started studying with this Dalai Lama. And then she was in Hong Kong. So So she just said something like, I wonder if it's their karma, because the Chinese government is doing something bad in Tibet. So, oh man, they flipped out, you know, the whole world. And Buddhist people started putting all over the internet what the real definition of karma is. But nobody really got it right. I don't think we should have written something. But she wasn't really saying, but she was thinking maybe, you know. But nobody, you know, in a time like that, seemingly innocent people, you know, millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people getting killed and things. But, like, everything has both sides. So just before that, the whole world was criticizing the Chinese government and talking about how bad they are and how they have human rights and so many things. And then when this happened, everybody suddenly felt compassion for them. And the government really worked hard. Fortunately, they have like the biggest army in the world, and they could send so many people there to try to help. But there's not much you can do when the earthquake keeps coming. But it's karma. But we can't say specifically, you know, who's karma. It's everybody put together. All these things. You know, the forest fires, the poverty, the war. They're all just natural, same thing. When there's a war, you can say, oh, you know, Bush did it, or Saddam Hussein did it, right? The earthquake, can't blame it. So people sometimes become a little religious, people pray, they realize maybe it's some kind of simple reaction. But this is the mature world, it's made that way, and it's not going to change. No amount of miracles and no amount of, you know, anything is going to change that. We can only change the way we deal with it. So then he says, the human being is a rational animal. Now I took the liberty of looking up rational in the dictionary for the people who don't know what that means. Who knows what that means?
Rational.
You probably know. It means, it's an adjective, based on or in accordance with the reason or logic of a person able to think clearly, sensibly, and logically, endowed with the capacity of to reason. A man is a rational being, different than the animal. That's the difference. But the animal can think also many things, but not exactly the same. For survival, animals are quite clever, and monkeys are very clever. Right? Pigs are very clever. They can always figure out how to open the gate. Monkeys can always figure it out. I read one little book, and there was a monkey in the zoo, and one baby monkey had a toothache, and you know it was hurting him. The other monkeys were trying to pull that tooth out. They couldn't do it, and so one worker who saw the monkey, so he threw the pliers in there. And the monkeys picked up and they figured it out and they pulled out the tooth. So they can do those things. But they don't. The difference is they don't have any spiritual things. For survival, they're much more clever. Manage to, you know, defend themselves and get their food and have sex, right? Without much trouble. But they don't build churches. Actually, I read a book. I wish I could find that book. I was in high school. And it was about some anthropologists. So these anthropologists had found something in, you know, I suppose that's supposed to be Africa, that was supposed to be the missing link, you know, between humans and the evolution, between humans and animals. But they couldn't figure out, like, if it was a human or an animal. So they did a study, like, what are the differences between animals and humans? And their conclusion was that humans have religion. That's the difference. That's the only difference. Right? So the humans without religion, without belief in God, they're worse than animals because they're not supposed to be. The animal has okay, that's the animal, that's the problem. You can't blame the animal that he doesn't believe in God. He's not against God either. And the animals go by their nature. They eat what their nature is. They have sex in season. They don't rape. And they don't beat up their wives. You know, they don't do things like that. They don't store tons of food. You know, and let the other animals die. They just take what they need, and they go away. And then, so human, that's a sadhu. So when rationality is destroyed, the human being is left an ordinary animal. The difference between the human being and the animal is based on the strength of the human being being above the animal propensity. The animal part of the human being necessarily requires food to eat, shelter to live, protection from fear, and protection from the gratification of the senses. These four principles of life are common both to man and animal. But there is another thing which is especially meant for the human, that is God consciousness. This God consciousness, this consciousness by absence, is conspicuous by its absence in animal life. While the human being, this God consciousness is dormant stages even in the society of aborigines. It develops in different grades of human civilization in terms of particular place, time, and person. This God consciousness is called religion or culture of life, without which there is no civilization can stand. So you can see, if you go in any ancient place, there's temples or, you know, whatever their religion is, buildings still left. They find signs, they find evidence of religion, even in the most so-called primitive society. They look up to something, sun, the big mountain, nature. It's always there. You can't get it out from human society, no matter how hard they try. Like in Poland, it used to be that salt was like very valuable thing, very expensive. The salt merchant would get really rich. Like the temple of Madame Mohan was built by a salt merchant. You know, he sold the salt and he got so much. Now it's somehow kind of thing. So the king of Poland for some time was extremely rich because they had all these salt mines. So they were digging very far near the salt salt. But now they don't dig salt from there anymore. But it's a tourist place. But there's so many churches that these salt mine workers would spend the night in there and carve out churches in the salt. And it's full of beautiful churches. You know, even though they worked all day in the salt mine, then they would stay all night and work before the church. So that's the natural thing a human being has. They want religion, they want God consciousness. So the present day is trying to avoid this God consciousness by artificial method of material science and forcible atheism. It is learned from reliable sources that in an atheistic state, the village people were called in a meeting were asked to pray in the church for daily bread. The innocent villagers prayed in the church for daily bread. When the prayer was over, the state officers asked them whether the bread was supplied. The village men replied that there was no bread. The atheistic politicians asked them to again pray for bread from them, the politicians. And bread was at once supplied. And by this method, the innocent villagers were made victims of propaganda by atheistic politicians. The result that all the villagers became gradually faithless in God because wrongly they accepted that the bread was supplied by the politician. That was in the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union. The poor victims of such propaganda do not understand that the bread supplied by the politicians were not made by the father of the politician. They were sent by God. The politicians cannot manufacture bread without wheat. No wheat can be produced without sun rays or rain from the sky. No rains are possible without obedience to God. No atheist can live and decry God without eating bread. Therefore, whoever eats bread without acknowledging the gratitude of his indebtedness to God is certainly a demon, and for such demons, the stringent material laws are meant for punishment. A time is nearing when there will be no wheat paddy in the field, and no politician will be able to make a quick supply of bread. The food problem already is acute. Now, this is 50 years ago. The atheistic civilization lives in India because after the British, they did have a big food problem. Because the British had killed so many cows and it ruined their agriculture. So this was only 10 years after independence. So India did have a crisis for food at that time. But then they became big food exporters. The ancient civilization is to be troubled more and more with the progress of materialism. We have such foretellings in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. The more the people are turning to the atheistic, the more things of disturbing elements to appear before us. But, and that is the thing which matters at present. This is a wrong type of civilization. So these are the same old things we hear again and again. We have to have faith in this, that this is what the people need. People will say they need so many things, right? Like devotees say, oh, we try to give a book, but they say, well, I need protection, I need my girlfriend to go down easy, I need money, right? Can you give me that? No. We're going to give you something much better, right? Much better. But no, no, I don't believe that, right? But some people will. Some people, when they see the book, they really want it. So they have to keep showing it to many, many people. Keep showing, keep showing. Then when we really realize the value of the holy name and the book, when we read the book, then Krishna will send more and more people who want it. Now this is, I have some quotes from St. Francis. I sent this to my African list, but not everybody knows. Above all, the grace and gifts of, that Christ gives to his beloved is that of overcoming the self, that means the mind and body. It is in giving that we receive. Right? Giving is receiving. Just taking all the time to just develop a big gap. Whatever it takes, pay it back. Whatever you give, you'll get back. Much more. So if we're always seeking a giving, especially giving Krishna, there's nothing better than giving. He says, I have been all things unholy. If God can work through me, he can work through anyone. So St. Francis was a very rich boy, and he was a big pension dealer, 5 years before he renounced it. It is superior to give any order to one who is, if the superior gives any order to one who is under him, which is against that man's consciousness, although he do not obey it, yet he shall not be dismissed. If you have men who will exclude any of God's creatures from the shelter of compassion and pity, you will have men who will deal likewise with their fellow men. Prabhupada said he would self-realize because he called the trees brother and the animals brother and sister. His famous poem is called Sister Moon, Brother Sun. So the king is supposed to protect all the citizens, including the animals, trees, but nowadays the government, right? They're making money by selling off all the trees. The Indians doing that. So now India ran out of trees, they have to come to Ghana to get it. Right? And the Ghana government's happy to sell them off. Right? Get money. Think with money you can do anything. Right? But without trees, without water, without, you know, all those things, what do you use for money? You can just buy a, you know, a tank to protect yourself. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. Pardon, you know what that means? You know. Anybody else? Huh? Forgiving, yeah. Something. It's a legal term. Criminal, let him go. If he's well behaved and he's lamenting and he's regretting his crime, then the government might say, okay, he's free. But don't do it again. Like Jesus told that woman, go and sin no more. But most Christians, so-called, they forget that sin no more. God forgives. Jesus forgives. No problem. It is no use walking anywhere to preach unless our walking is our preaching. Follow? What did Bhakti Sirkumar Joey say? similar thing. But he said it in an American, Afro-American talk. You have to walk your talk. You have to do what you say. You have to. You don't tell people, do what I say, not what I do. Right? Like many leaders, many parents. You do what I tell you, but don't imitate me. Don't smoke, don't drink, don't, right? So, walk your talk. It is not fitting when one is in God's service to have a gloomy face or a chilling look. It doesn't, you know, what do people want to serve God for if you look miserable and you're saying you should surrender to Krishna? Lord, grant that I might not so much seek to be loved as to love. Follow? Make me an instrument of thy peace, where there's hatred, let me plant love. No one is to be called an enemy, all are your benefactors, and no one does you harm. You have no enemy except yourself. What does Krishna say? I'm equal to everyone. Samaskarveshu, Bhupeshu. Right? I'm equal to everyone. I don't envy anyone. That's Krishna. So the devotee is supposed to be like that. This is an interesting one. Preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. Same thing, walk your talk. If your behavior, yajyada charati shesta, what a great man does, the common man follows. So now people like to vote for devotee type people. You know, then they have a few of I'm just doing it as a leader. They like to give big money to these pastors who are big sense gratifiers and are rich. And, you know, they like to give them money, thinking, I can become like that. I can also be a good enjoyer. Start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you're doing the impossible. Where there is charity and wisdom, there's no fear or ignorance. Where there is injury, let me give pardon. While you are proclaiming peace with your lips, be careful to have it even more fully in your heart. So he was some kind of Babaji, but he was in the Roman Catholic Church, and he's still one of the reasons the Roman Catholic Church is still strong, because people get inspired by thinking. And so we in our line, we have so many great personalities, even currently, Bhakti Kirtanaji is a very great personality. But the thing, it's easy to get people to come and bow down and offer flowers. You can see that in the temple. Big lineup for that. But then for class, not as many. And for thank you time, not as many. For taking responsibility. But to really glorify the Guru, you have to serve and take care of it. Responsibility to take up the work that he was trying to do, that he was doing, and carry on, and try to be see things, like we say, Shastra Kshatriya, see things according to Shastra, see things the way Krishna sees things, see things the way Guru sees them. That's where we have to study the Shastra, so we know. Otherwise, we'll judge according to our conditioning, we'll react to stimulus. And if we were in a reactionary mode, that creates a lot of trouble. One has to think What would Krishna do? There's Christian group that has a thing they wear a pendant on there. It says WWJD. What would Jesus do? So the idea is to think about how would Jesus react? Somebody cheated me, and what would Jesus do, right? Somebody insulted him, right? What would Jesus do? Not what would Siddhama Singh do. What would Abhacha do? Hold the Tundu, you know, the people that we hear about. What would Prabhupada do? What would Krishna do? We're just watching that Mahabharata, but that's the whole thing. You know, it's the mind of demoniac nature. The one side of the atheistic people, they may be very great personalities, Duryodhana, great person, Karna, charitable, running the kingdom very efficiently. Nowadays, even the big leaders that are atheists, they're not, their kingdoms are run great. They're everywhere in the world, they're taking so much. And they have these elections in Africa, and they're always, but the other elections also, you know, right? They're just more expert at cheating in America and Europe. It doesn't look like they're cheating. They convince everybody. It's all on television, it's all on the computer, it must be all right. But they can put anything they want on the computer. Put anything they want on the television. So, we know that ultimately Krishna is in control of everything. And we have to do this Mahayagya to uplift the society. This is interesting, right? I was trying to look up something from my rock group, and I found this song, which I never heard. It came out after I was a devotee, I think. But all the rock and roll people in England, they all had, especially this group, they had, were friends of George Harrison. So they were influenced to some extent. They met devotees and they heard Kirtan. So this song is called Time Waits for No One. By one of the most degraded, sense gratificatory rock and roll groups ever. It's still the most famous, still have the most biggest concert after 40 years. But star-crossing pleasure, the stream flows on by. We're sated in leisure, we watch it fly. Time waits for no one, and it won't wait for me. And time waits for no one, and it won't wait for me. Time can tear down a building or destroy a woman's face. Hours are like diamonds. Don't let them wait. Right? It's like Chanakya Pandit. Time waits for no one, no favors, says he. Time waits for no one, and he won't wait for me. Men, they build towers to their passing, to their fame everlasting. Here he comes chopping and reaping. Hear him laugh at their cheating. And time waits for no one, he won't wait for me. Drink in your summer, gather your corn. The dreams of the nighttime will vanish by dawn. Time waits for no one, and it won't wait for me. No, 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 no. So everyone, Kirani Kachipu, he preached very nicely to the wives of Hiranyaksha, about the soul and the turning. The demons also can do that. They can understand. They can sing about and write books and poetry about how much suffering there is in the material world. Right? But they don't know the solution. And they don't want to take the solution. They think, no, we'll enjoy anyway. Right? Time is moving fast, so we better enjoy it quickly. Right? It's all going to be over. That they twist it around. When I was a new devotee, I went to visit one of my previous friends that I used to get drunk with all the time. And because his mother would let us get drunk in his house when she was intelligent, The other parents would tell us not to drink, and then we'd go out driving around and get drunk. she was intelligent, so we were drinking this up. And so he said, yeah, I believe like you do. I believe that I'm not the body. So I eat anything, drink, do anything, because I'm not the body anyway. So this is, many people, they have that much understanding, you're not the body. You're going to die anyway. You're going to die soon. So they conclude that you better cram in as much enjoyment as possible. I saw on television somewhere, and they were showing the number one song, the Grammy Award, a couple of years ago. So that in the country western, one was called Live Like You're Dying. So I thought, wow, that sounds intelligent. And that was the only thing I just saw walking by. But that song, it starts out, the guy saying, I went to the hospital and did all the tests, and they told me I'm going to die, like in 6 months. So, got into it. That's number one. Live like you're dying. We are supposed to think like that. Live like you're dying. And it would, you know, chant all the time, that you could die in a minute. This devotee is in Iraq. You know, talk to Sergeant of it. Every day there'd be so many people killed, children killed, bombs going. So he's saying how he doesn't sleep, and I told him, he said, I can't sleep. The bombs are going off all the time. He's remembering all day long what he saw, you know, dead bodies, blown up bodies, not dead, it's even worse, you know. People are blown apart. And he got wounded a few times. One time, he's a sergeant, he's in charge of many men. So they, every day they have to go out for like 12 hours, drive around, look for trouble. And one guy just panicked, he flipped out, and he put the gun right in the head of the sergeant and said, I'm not going, and if we have to go one more time, I'm going to shoot you. You know? And he somehow talked him out of it, you know. And then the other guys grabbed him, and they put him in the hospital. And he went to the hospital every day and read Chaitanya Charitamrita. He goes out preaching and selling books, you know, and he has extra time. He keeps book stands all over the base, you know, with books, and people give money every week, and he sold 500 pages. But, you know, his health is going really bad. But so many of the men, they appreciate, you know, appreciate read Bhagavad Gita. The government even gave him a room to teach Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna's showing, you know, the material world. Markandeya Rishi, he was doing great tapasya, and he took the benediction, and he could really see the raw face of the material energy, and all of a sudden, oh, you know, he was in the devastating ocean and being thrown everywhere for so many yoga cycles or something, you know, completely, finally saw the baby Krishna and landed on island and everything was kind of actually landed in Navajit. But he's getting that somehow learning. And then one devotee was in America, paramedic. You know, saying like that. In America that is called a paramedic, kind of a half doctor. You know, they're educating a lot in emergency medicine. And they drive a big ambulance. And the ambulance has so much inside. So special. And then they have a radio and they talk to the doctors. So they go to all the big emergencies. Now he's in San Francisco. So mostly it's suicide and drug overdose. You know, people are dying from taking so many drugs. Have to give them something to nullify the drug. Then they get mad. I was high, man. That they're having like heart attacks, that they think it's excellent. And then the suicide, you know, sometimes they can rescue people. Sometimes they just find them in so many different ways they kill themselves. In the internet, they even tell you how to do it. They have web pages telling you how to successfully suicide. You can just go to any pharmacy and buy certain things and take them in a certain order and
guarantee. So he said he learned a lot, you know, about the material world. You know, birth, death, and age, and old age. It's everywhere. But it's everywhere, everywhere we go. In India, you see the dead body a lot. You know, they walk them down the roads. And, you know, it's more open. In America and Europe, they cover it up like this. And I always make you think there's no problem because we have these big ambulances and we have a good hospital. There's no problem. Right? That's what Yudhishthira said. That's the most amazing thing. That everyone is seeing death, everyone knows that everyone else in the past has gone to Yamaraj, but still, they think, I'll make permanent arrangements, I'll stay here forever. And then there's even described in the Bhagavatam one philosophy where they know they're going to die, but they think, we'll just do good karma, and then we'll take another good birth, and we'll just carry on enjoying. No problem. Nowadays, people don't even think like that. They just think, whatever I did right now, they don't really believe, even the religious people. They have no understanding of the suicide bombers. They think they're going to go meet Allah and heaven and live very nicely. They interviewed one guy who said, I'm dressing up very nicely before I suicide bomb because I'm going to meet Allah and not listen. You know. No spiritual kind, no understanding. But we do have at least knowledge, theoretically. And if we just carry on and strictly follow the regulative principles. We hear so many things I even heard from my godbrother saying that, well, you know, having no sex with a wife, having sex only, that's like the highest goal to shoot for, but, you know, what can be done? Yeah. But I thought, at least my, maybe I'm stupid, but I thought when I promised Prabhupada that that's what it meant. You know, I promised. Finished. Right? That it's not like I'm saying I promise to try to follow the religion. But if I can't follow it, what can be done? No. Don't make promises you can't keep. That was another song I used to like. Don't make promises. In business, if you make a promise and you can't keep it, you're in trouble, right? So depending on what country you're in, they'll kill you. Or they'll just, you know, you'll be out of business. You know, they won't be able to do it. You'll get your license taken away. You'll get notified. Everybody will know this business is no good. Right? If you promise to deliver and you don't do it. But now people don't, you know, like marriage vows. Even in Israel, it's more religious than most countries. But basic Israelis say the first marriage is for practice. Then you learn, you make all your mistakes, and you try again, maybe get better the next time. Not everybody, but you know, that these things are there. In Europe and America now, so many people, they never get married. They just live together. They're following Srimad Bhagavatam. It says in Kali Yuga, marriage will just be an agreement for sex. And when the sex is not, you know, what they want it to be, you know, sometimes they kill their wife, sometimes they just separate. Some people are a little, I don't know what you call it, culture, but they have an agreement, you know, okay, we'll just live together and we don't get along anymore. Just put the marriage means you have to divorce or so much evil problems. This Kali Yuga, this is all predicted and all the things that are going on and all the difficulties we have amongst ourselves and with the outside world, and it's all Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, we can only get out from Kali Yuga by the kirtan, by chanting the holy name. Wherever there's strict chanting of the holy name and following of the regulative principles, then Kali can't come in. He can only live in the places where there's illicit sex, or gambling, intoxication, animal slaughter. So that's almost everywhere now. So we're trying to create places where there isn't that, right? And there's kirtan. And he's very much afraid of the sankirtan movement. So he's especially now pushing his mission very strong, pushing, you know, the illicit everything, right? The gambling everywhere and expected, what does it say? Expected good time? The casino at the airport. So the white girl, you know, that in London, most of the taxis, you know, they have advertising on the side for the poker room and the casino and the online gambling. And one of them showed the casino and it showed two women, obviously lovers, you know, gambling, you know, and promoting it. Everywhere they're promoting. Kali is working hard. The devotees, we need to also work harder than Kali and promote Krishna consciousness. Tell people one by one or group by group or however we can do it. Tell them about Krishna. Show them, at least show them what it is. Give them the holy name. Because people will appreciate it. Like that Daniel we met at the airport, he said, the taxi driver. One time I came in the old days, there was no phones and everything. And I took the taxi. And first he wanted, those are expensive taxis. And I said, no, I'm not going to pay them, you know, whatever they say when we get there. Then he said, I saw he had some kind of Jesus thing on the dashboard. He said, so tell me, you know, what's your religion? So I told him about lust, greed, and anger, and all those, you know, that basic idea. He was very happy. He got here, he went in the office, somebody preached to him, gave him a book. He gave a great cry. And every time I come to the airport, he comes to the building, he goes, so happy. And he remembers the other devotees. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, preaching to one person is better than preaching like to a crowd, you know, to give a, you know, lecture at the church or the university. That's okay, but to actually preach to one person and communicate with that person and give them Krishna, that's better. And then they'll tell someone else. You know. So there's many things to be learned, and Krishna's giving us everything. And Srimad Bhagavatam has everything. We do have copies now, what we should be reading it. Srivasa is teaching. What are you teaching now? Next year, huh? That's what Devi Asprimai gave the seminar. He didn't get past the first. Because all of these things are unlimited. About every verse, we can just go over and over and over again and understand it from many, many different angles. Here's another. This is written by my godbrother, Vaisheshika Kadai. He joined when he was about 16 years old and started distributing books right away. And from reading back to Godhead magazine, and I worked with him for a few years. I was his teacher, but he surpassed me very quickly. He would go to, he was very big, and he was like, oh, at that time, 18 years old or something, very good looking guy. He'd say, excuse me, these books are heard, sung, and accepted by the five people everywhere. You know, quoted about them. And people would, they were capable. So now, and he never stopped distributing books, even though he was married and he made his own business, but he always distributed books. made a quite successful business without having to work, you know, by preaching. So now he has to become the president in ISV. That means this kind of Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is where all the computers, you know, all the headquarters and that. Our mission is to show kindness to all living beings by vigorously promoting public Harinam Sankirtan performance and massive distribution of transcendental literature. He made a program on called Weekend Warrior. Once a month, he gets the congregation people, and of course they get permission different places to have a table, and then they just go and sell books, and now 150 of them. Of course, they got, it's a special place because it's full of Indians and they're young and they all got good jobs and it's a beautiful part of California, you know, with the ocean and the mountains. And, it helps, but the idea is working in other places. We also maintain a temple which we worship the Lord in a spiritually surcharged, friendly and welcoming atmosphere, encouraging devotees at all levels in the process of Krishna consciousness through systematic training, and by regularly offering access to the practice of the nine direct methods of Bhakti Yoga, following the mood of Prabhupada. Silicon Valley is rife with organizations and opulent buildings that are filled up with workers. Big, big computer companies. So what do we do to offer this special? What do we have? What shall be our distinguishing quality that will attract the people to come? Is it our ability to collect money, or to build and maintain property, or to perform detailed rituals? Probably not. And if so, there are others who do it much better than we. I contend that we will and should become most known for qualities that are not seen, and that are extremely rare supply in the modern world. Generosity, mercy, and kindness. Somewhere in the mad rush to expand technology and catch the elusive American dream, masses of people have been left behind and have lost contact with each other and with themselves. Okay? I had one friend in Japan who was a unique Japanese. He's the best Japanese translator in the world. And he also had many, many friends. The Japanese usually have only one or two friends. He had so many friends, all kinds of people. Politicians, monks, hippies, drug addicts, everybody. And he was saying how Japanese, they don't know how to express themselves. Then he said, even if they learned how to express themselves, they don't know who they are. So they don't know what to express. So they're very frustrated because they've been putting on that. They've been taught, you have to act like this here, you have to act like that there. You have to put on this face here, you have to put on that face there. And so they don't, we lose track of who we are. We go to work, we have to go to school. They don't teach people. That's why this university in Enugu, which is called the African Thinking University, is very special. Trying to teach the people to think. Not just memorize things, pass the test, get the job, memorize more things, pass another test. But how to think creatively, constructively, and critically. People are oppressed by demanding work that pays them barely enough to live. Now he's talking about Silicon Valley, where people have really high salaries. And, you know, they get more in 1 month than you get in your whole life. But it's still not enough to live because they're Americans. And they think that they need an electric car and a Hummer for their children to go to school, and they need a big house, and they need Louis Vuitton bags, and they need the Gucci glasses, and they don't have enough money. Old people have become shut in, isolated in their own house. Was it in Ghana or Nigeria? I went to one television and there was at an old folks' home. And the interviewer was asking, why don't they care about the old people anymore? in Nigeria, Africa, and India is one of the last places where they do, you know, still love their old people and respect them, but it's going down fast. In America, so much. Family farms are being replaced by giant agri-businesses. Instead of friendly local commerce and mother and father stores, impersonal big box enterprises now dominate local neighborhoods, big, big department stores. Here we're getting a few, not the really good ones. They're coming. Coming soon. Department stores that are so big you can't see the end of it. And they have everything, except any kind of personal exchange with the people. And corporations lay off workers with no thought of their ultimate welfare. The people in America that work for big, big companies, they're just always worried that their company is going to lay them off. The big companies are closing so many factories. Even the Citibank, the biggest bank in the world, is firing 10,000 workers. The bank makes more money now. They don't need those. Then he gives a story I told him that his mother died. I'm arguing here that people in the world are starving for these loving exchanges and pure kindness. I know I am. Fortunately for us, we have based our mission on these ideals. With such a solid basis for our existence, we can expect to be successful in every way. After all, when we strip away everything else, we'll find that this is what people want. They want love, and that's what Krishna wants. Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from all ego, is dear to me. These qualities are not only valued by Krishna, but they're universal pleasing. Our success will come by focusing on them. To do this requires that we think of ourselves as humble servants, and that we scheme how to assist others. When someone comes into our group, it is our duty and privilege to make sure that we attend to their needs. For instance, when someone enters the temple room, we should all feel eager to see that they have a place to sit, a book stand, and that they know which page we are on. We should make new people feel welcome and learn their names, greeting them with warmth. At big festivals, we must go out of our way to make sure everyone gets what they need, some personal attention. Preaching outside the temple, we should leave each person feeling that he or she has just met a saintly person. Saintly means generous, friendly, happy, and kind. We should honor our existing members as the rarest souls in the universe who have all come to this town of Silicon Valley due to the Lord's divine arrangement. Or there is kind of media ability. Right? What does Krishna say? I'm in everyone's heart. So he's guiding the movement. So if someone comes to the temple, they're guided by Krishna. The devotees are the most exalted persons on the planet. They're the king. Yeah, members, our family members, let's make sure that they feel included and that they're getting the spiritual material support they need. Generosity and kindness. Without these, our so-called mission will become yet another stale religious institution in which property, money, and rituals outweigh the importance of the Vaishnava or even human spirit. How careful we must be to regularly examine our motives and methods. For if we compromise our ideals for the sake of expediency, or out of pride that we will lose, then we will lose what is most valuable. So-called devotional practice of neglect showing kindness to other living entities, where Krishna's parts and parcels are useless. To achieve our lofty goals, we must surrender, maintaining our own commitment and our sadhana. What is sadhana? A devotee asked me yesterday, what is sadhana? Yeah. Maybe they're doing it, but they don't know what it is. Sadhana means practice, it's literally. So we're chanting a japa sadhana, coming to temple of sadhana, main thing is japa, sadhana, main thing is reading and chanting and hearing about Krishna. Those who are surrendering put aside their personal interests and agenda, become free to take up the interest and agenda of the Lord and His representatives, the great Acharya. Such devotees can join the Sankirtan party of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spread His mission. They can serve others wholeheartedly. There is no greater privilege, nor can the reputation of one who does so be matched by anyone in creation. So Krishna says, there's no one more dear to me. Our mission is not confined just to this building. This is one place we worship the Lord and serve the devotees. But we want to carry it everywhere, to our home, our job, and all our interactions with all kinds of people and living beings. Real temple building begins in our hearts and lives. Lord Chaitanya taught us. And Lord Shiva said that great souls almost always voluntarily accept suffering for the sake of other living beings. So these are, you know, we keep saying, some of you have been to Chopadi, Radhanath Swami came and explained to us, you know, how some of these things got started. So he came from another community which is very much based on money and that kind of success, who collected the most money, no concern for the people, just for the show, big building, big project, big money. So he said when he set the priorities for Chopadi, he did the opposite. And he knew it would succeed. People-oriented. Everything is for taking care of the devotees. Everything is for sadhana. So from the beginning, even though there was not much there, they didn't have good facility, they had very few devotees, everything was based on sadhana and Vaishnava seva. Chanting the holy name, serving the devotees, caring for the devotees. And then from that mood, so many things have developed so that they have so many ways to take care of the devotees now. Everybody becomes very happy. And that can be done anywhere, but it starts with this caring consciousness, compassion, loving. Everyone naturally has this love and compassion, but oftentimes it's not encouraged in modern society. Right? But Shakespeare, what did he say? The quality of mercy is not strange. Mercy is, you know, there. I think, what is it? Mother Teresa's group called Sisters of Mercy. Isn't it? And some of the nuns in there. So mercy means giving. Everyone is suffering, so devotees know that, and they want to help the people. They want to try to relieve their suffering. And of course, amongst devotees, if someone is sick, or needs help, needs a job, or, you know, has been cursed, and maybe we have to help. We can't say, well, you're just fallen, you're sinful, and it's your karma. You've made offense to me, and that's why you're suffering. You know, that may be true. Sometimes it is true, but everything is our karma, and it is a, you know, but it's also for the other devotees to test to see if they're all taking part. Then when we have a community of love and caring and service, then of course people want to join. When new people come, we want to engage them. I've seen, I don't know exactly here, but many temples now, because not so many new people come. And when a new person does come, they just immediately engage them in all the cleaning. They don't have any classes, or they, you know, no time for no sadhana. They just, oh, you can just serve for them. And then they come for a while, and because they're hearing kirtan, but then they don't stay. New people should get, you know, so many classes every day. And even in Chopadi, they have a brahmachari class every day. And 11 o'clock. And so when I gave it, they were asking, you know, how can we avoid making offenses to the devotees? You know, they're concerned. And even though they're so trained and they're well behaved, seeming to everyone else, still we have, you know, when we are all together, we're going to bump into each other. Right? Can't help it. in a crowded bus or something, you might step on somebody's foot. But if it's really crowded, they won't blame you. If you just walk across the room and stomp on their foot, then they can blame you for that. If you just get pushed on the bus and you fall on somebody, they just laugh. You know, we have to think like that. That's the way society, Kunti said that, you know, social discord. Problems are just due to social interaction. We want to be like Yudhisthira. We don't want to be like Duryodhana. Duryodhana can't live on the same planet with Arjuna. Arjuna was superior in him. Duryodhana wanted Draupadi. Draupadi rejected him and wanted to look at him. So, and Draupadi especially favored Arjuna, even she took care of all her husbands. But even though he had the kingdom that no one has ever had and will have again, unlimited wealth and opulence and the citizens, and he still wanted, he didn't care to get what Yudhisthira had, he just wanted to eliminate him. Didn't need what he had. We don't want to be like that. That's the theme. Nishvaraham Ambhundi. Siddhoham Balavan Sukhi. I am perfect. I am the controller. I am powerful. I am happy. My enemy has something. I'll kill him and get that. I'll eliminate him. I'll be the victor. Right. We want to be like Krishna. Samaham Samabhutesh. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. So now many are probably going to this memorial. So start thinking, even write something down, because we want all the devotees who had any kind of association. But even if you didn't have, you know, traveling with Bhakti Krishna Maharaj or, you know, cooking for him, but you just had, you were inspired. Think about it ahead of time, get it a little bit in order so that everybody can speak them. You know, you won't be panicky as you say, please speak. And, you know. Because everybody has their relationship. And for a really sincere devotee, when the guru disappears, the relationship becomes even more intimate. The guru acts through the heart much more. If someone's really trying to follow and carry out the mission. And Prabhupada said, when I was in Gita Nagari, that Devi Ambar, she asked us to give a seminar, like, because they knew Bhakti Krishna Maharaj would be leaving very soon. And how will the devotee be when... So I found the fourth canto was interesting because they had a very old copy of it from the original. And all the part I was looking for was underlined. It's all about that king when the wife of the king died, and Prabhupada is giving the comparison to when the guru leaves and how the disciples should feel. That's ideal. He should want to kill himself if he can't follow the vows and he can't follow the mission. He should rather die. But he should want it, he should carry on the mission. But some will just think, okay, the guru's gone now, I can do whatever I want. All kinds of different disciples will be there. But that somebody had, when Prabhupada disappeared, had gone over that and underlined it and still had the same book. So everybody that's going, please think about that. You know, because we want everyone to speak. We don't want just one or two people to give long talk. We want to hear from all the devotees and, you know, what inspired them and, you know, how we want to try to please Guru because he's still around, still watching, waiting for the things to develop. Some things are developing. We have to expect there's many setbacks in trying to do something. Krishna's just trying to make us try hard, not to give up. But relationships are, you know, very important. So if we have this compassionate mood and we're trying to serve, help everybody, whoever it is, when we're preaching, when we go out in Sankirtan, when we go on Harinam, that we're thinking, these people are getting the holy name, they're getting connected to Krishna. We want them to come to the temple. Yesterday I was walking down here and there was somebody, a boy and girl walking. They asked me, which roads are the Hare Krishna, you know, the road goes home. They said, which roads are the Hare Krishna? That's the fact. But many people go like this. And if we're really trying to give more and more, and Krishna is the most valuable thing. When people get Krishna, they feel very grateful, very happy. And when people, you know, automatically, whatever else will come, we have to be careful not to be thinking, what will I give them? But if Krishna is pleased, Guru is pleased, then everything goes well. Okay, sorry it's so long, but you know, you're all leaving it tomorrow morning. I got to figure out my travel map. I'll show you something interesting for the Africans. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.